Hello, this is Rita Selby, and you're listening to WBAI 99.5 FM. We're celebrating International Working Women's Day, and my guest is Jan Rigsby. This first segment traces how one woman worked her way up from the factory floor to owning her own manufacturing company. In the second part, we look at Jan's decision to change careers, undergo a 10-year training program, and become a spiritual counselor. Jan has spent her first 7 years teaching the spiritual discipline called Pathwork in Australia and currently lives in Brooklyn. I met Jan Rigsby at one of the monthly free presentations in Manhattan, sponsored by the New York Region Pathwork. In fact, Jan will be speaking there tonight after this broadcast, and listeners can look up the details at pathworkny.org. Now, I was fascinated by Jan's ability to explain abstract spiritual concepts by using real-life examples. She has an unusual background and has lived an unusual life. Yet her story and her teaching focus upon the ways in which we are all one, how we have more similarities than differences. Welcome, Jan.
Thank you.
It's good to have you here in the studio.
Glad to be here.
Jan, what were some of your dreams as a child and a young woman?
I was hesitant to talk about my early life because I felt like I went through life in a bit of a fog. I accomplished things. I was good at school. I had a lot of different interests. But it felt like throughout my life, my first choice was never on the table. So I constantly looked at second and third choices as palatable, acceptable, without really knowing what my first choice might be. I remember a few instances. I think I was 7 when I was asked, what do I want to be when I grow up? And I said, a doctor. Now, this was 1956, so the answer was, that's nice, darling. Perhaps you can teach for a few years before you get married. And it's hard to explain how that hits a child. There's a place in me that I consider a coward because I bent under that kind of pressure. I let it go. I don't think I ever again dreamed of being a doctor. Another incident was when I was 12 and I had to sign up for an elective course in middle school and I wanted to take shop. And my mother just looked at that and said, you're out of your mind. You've got to learn to cook and you've got to learn to sew. And I guess other women were courageous enough to fight for wood shop or auto shop, but I didn't. I took home ec and was miserable at it. So, like I say, I applied myself as much as I could to different activities. I won awards. I was good at things. But my dreams never seemed like I could activate them. I didn't see a place for me in the world. And then when I was 16, I took some tests from the Johnson O'Connor Foundation. They were aptitude tests. And lo and behold, after 3 days of testing, they sat down with my parents and said, okay, don't ever ask this young lady to do women's work because she has no female aptitudes of any kind whatsoever. She is more suited for structural engineering. Now, I was already 16 and life was already in place, and I had already excelled on calculus and math and English, and I couldn't go back and pick up auto shop and wood shop. So there I was with all these aptitudes that had not been used going forward. And if you don't live your life as fully as you can, I, in a joking way, feel that hormones and social events take care of it. So I turned 17 in 1967, and that took care of it. I eloped. I dropped out of college. I dropped out of life. I ran away from the plastic life, the artificial life that I thought was being designed for me, and began my own life from scratch as best I could. So 10 years later, when I was 27 and had stayed home with my kids for 7 years, I finally got my first chance to go back to work with no rules, no regulations, just make some money and come home and pick up the kids before 3:30. So it was a blank check for me to start my life. But I was 27 years old.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, how did you wind up owning a factory?
It was interesting. It was fascinating. It was wonderful. I felt like a kid in a candy store. I got hired by a gentleman who saw a high school graduate, which is the only credential I had, as an intelligent high school graduate with common sense, as the perfect solution to his production control problems. Now, being naive, I didn't realize the company was on the verge of bankruptcy and anything was better than nothing. So I hired into this chemical etching firm, wound up bearing responsibility for 4 to 5 different production lines, different chemicals, gold and silver etching processes, liaisoning with sales representatives, quality control, bringing checks back and forth to the accounting department. It was heaven. It was absolute heaven. I learned every single day. I didn't want to go home. I didn't want to go pick up the kids. I just wanted to work. And I went through a succession of jobs because I was not paid well and because there are such things as glass ceilings and networking and old boys networks. And when I felt that I had gone as far as I could in a company, I could afford to simply quit and look for another job. So I went through a succession of jobs, and every single job I had, I was able to learn more. I know that factories are not the current in thing now. We don't do a lot of manufacturing in the United States as much as we used to. But to learn how things are put together was a passion that I had never realized of mine. And so I worked up through production control, through inventory control, materials management, purchasing, planning. And then when my boss wouldn't pay me what I wanted and I started being leaned on by the family to contribute an equal share of the income, I took a job as an operations manager of a small West Coast division of a major company. And again, I was in heaven. I got to do almost everything. Now I was the technical sales representative. I was 34 years old. I looked like I was 20. Had to wear my hair in a bun, couldn't wear contacts, had to wear glasses because otherwise no one would listen to me. Who's the little girl over there, was their attitude. But in a small privately held company, what they cared about was results. That's what they cared about. And they were willing to overlook who produced them. So I spent a number of years there. And then my company merged with a competitor, and they didn't need me. And at that point, I had my daughter was in college. My son was finishing high school. My husband had been laid off work a month or two earlier. I was the only breadwinner in the family. And it was a service industry. So I had the right to go to my customers and say, come with me. I will continue doing the job I've been doing for you for the last 5 years. And so we took all our retirement money and we put it into a company and we started a manufacturing company.
Wow.
Yeah. And again, I'm not sure about the courageous part. I didn't see any alternative. I had to make some money. I had to support a family. And at that point, I would have to start over in another company. And so this was the only way I could see to maintain the income and to maintain the momentum of my career. So that's how I became the owner of a manufacturing company.
Mm-hmm. So it's exciting and difficult at the same time.
Yes, very much so. In terms of being a startup, it can sound very romantic, but you work 12 to 16 hours a day. I'd get up at 6 o'clock in the morning. I'd be lucky if I got home till midnight. I cleaned the bathrooms on the weekend because I was embarrassed for my employees to know that we couldn't afford a maintenance crew. And I wanted the bathroom clean. So when people would come into my factory, they would be very impressed by the order and cleanliness of the factory, which was very important in my industry. So there was a lot of benefits to a woman-owned company. But I also cared about the systems. I cared about how things worked. I cared about the employees. And over a 20-year period of time, we built the equivalent of a family-based organization. Family in the sense of emotional commitment. Everybody was on the same team. We would work together to figure out problems. And I had three employees who worked for me from the time they were 18 and 19 years old until we closed the company 20 years later. So they were almost 40 years old, and they had not worked for anybody else. And it was very, very rare. And it was time. It was like my kids almost. It was as if I raised my kids and let them go out in the world, and then I raised my employees, and it was time for them to find their own way, and also time for me.
Wow. You must have learned a lot about yourself in that 20 years, and I wonder what kind of person ends up owning a factory.
I don't think there's any one answer to that, but like I said, I didn't know I had these talents. I didn't know what was possible, and I was very lucky to piece my way through life. It's like a patchwork quilt that I put together by circumstance. Now that I'm a spiritual counselor, I don't see it as circumstance. I really believe that you get what you need in life. And part of my success, I think, was in always saying yes. Can you fix this? Well, I don't know how to fix it, but I'll try. I wound up being able to address almost any problem that somebody threw at me. And if I couldn't, I asked for help. It helps if you're underpaid, because then they really can't criticize you if you can't fix it. You're not really trying to puff yourself up. You're trying to save the money every step of the way. So saying yes was a big contributor to my being able to be allowed to do all the tasks that taught me skills.
Wow. Did you have the benefit of any mentors throughout all of this?
Not really. This is the place where being a girl and not having been brought up in the environment. I didn't have brothers that taught me these things. My dad didn't teach me these things. One example, my dad was a military officer, and he would take me to air shows when I was a kid and say, climb in the plane. And I was bored to tears. Why do you want to climb in a plane? Then when I was 40-odd years old, I went on a blind date with a pilot, and he said, would you like to fly? And I thought, I can fly? And I put my hands on the yoke of that wheel, and it was as if the plane went in through my skin and attached itself to me. And I became a pilot. I hold private, commercial, and instrument licenses. I owned my own plane. If my dad had told me, would you like to fly, I might have joined the Air Force. But it's an example of where I didn't see a choice offered to me, and I didn't do the work to make that choice possible.
A pilot?
A pilot.
You say that so matter-of-factly.
Well, it wasn't matter-of-fact. As a matter of fact, we're going to talk in the second segment about my training as a spiritual counselor. I was earning my pilot's license at the same time I was starting classes, and I bored my classmates silly because I could see the analogy. I could see the correlation between the abstract concepts that I was learning and learning to risk going into 3D space and rely on my skills and abilities. It literally lifted off the ground. I think this relates to factory management a bit, although it happened later. I remember when I was starting to learn to fly, he tried to get me to talk on the radio. Now, here I am talking on the radio very easily, but let me tell you that 20 years ago, there was no way I could talk on the radio. And so it was a very good instructor, and he said, honey, what I want you to do, they did say honey, but that's okay. I want you to go up to the control tower before you come to your lesson next time. You know, call them, tell them you're coming, and I want you to go up to the control tower, and I want you to watch them as they talk to the pilots on the radio. I want you to see that they're normal human beings who put on their pants one leg at a time and that they're very happy to speak to you. So I did, and I went up to the control tower, and I watched these guys do their job, and he was right. They were human beings. They were just trying to get the planes in and out. That's all they were trying to do. Mm-hmm. And the next time I got in the plane, I found it easier to speak to them. I found that I was speaking to them like I'm speaking on the air right now, one person to another.
Yeah. And so that was a good piece of advice, helped you get to the next step.
Yes, it was. So I think what you were asking was, did I have any specific mentors? It was as if I created my mentors. If somebody would give me a hand, I would take it. I would ask. I would sit down and listen to. I would follow any advice or any suggestions that I was given. But in terms of mentors, it was hard for a girl who wasn't in the crowd, part of the boy network, in a factory situation. But you can still get information. You just have to work extra hard at it.
Well, you said one habit that helped you along was to say yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Just like that, yes.
And what else did you learn for our listeners? What else did you learn that could be accessed by others?
I learned from the radio controllers, I learned to distill things down to the common denominator. What was the same? What did I already know? When I would move from job to job, what was the goal of the organization? Okay. In factories, the goal is to get the parts out the door, and anything that prevents that from happening needs to be addressed. Mm-hmm. I wasn't very good at politics. I wasn't very good at trading favors, and I just didn't understand the concept of bribing people to do their job. But I found that most people really want to get their job done. And they're very grateful when someone is willing to come out and remove an obstacle. And they're grateful to be heard in their complaints. Even if you can't do something about it, at least they've been heard. So that's what I found was the common thread throughout. And that's what I tried to create in my factory, an open atmosphere where people would talk about problems and we would agree to fix them as best we could. And if we couldn't fix them, at least we discussed them.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good. Now, all this time, you're raising a family.
Yes.
Right? Okay. I just wanted to be clear on that.
Yeah.
Sounds engrossing.
And that's where I thought I had something in common with working women today. Although mm-hmm. I had 7 years at home, it was a gift because we could afford for me to do that. I didn't really handle well responsibilities with my kids once I started working. I was so hungry, so thirsty for a life of my own. I felt like a kid who'd never been given what she wanted, that I put more energy into my job. And I didn't really understand children well, so I didn't put a lot of energy into them. Now, that's all hindsight. My kids say I did a great job. So there's a place where you need to accept that you may not be the best mother, but you weren't the worst. You did a good job. And today, when I work with my kids, we talk about what I didn't do well as honestly as I can, and that winds up being more important than the fact that I did not give them all the time that they craved when they were growing up. It's not an easy thing to balance a family and a profession.
No, it's not. No, it's not. Well, it's, I think it's fascinating that you were able to give so much of yourself to your work outside of the home. And even though you would have liked things to have been different, your kids say to you today, you did a great job.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the test there.
In the work that I do now, we work with the concept where perfectionism becomes an obstacle, where when you can't do it perfectly, to some sense, you don't want to do it at all. And that's what I was trapped in sometimes. I thought if I couldn't be the perfect mother, I'd rather just walk away from it and do something I could do well instead of understanding the humanity of just having to do the best you could moment to moment and accept it was the best you could do.
Yeah. Well, I guess you might be grateful for some of the lessons you've learned that took you into the next phase of your life.
Yes. So what I found was as I went from job to job, every time I went to the next job, it seemed like I could build the new job out of everything I'd learned before. So I took everything I knew from my high school days, from my traveling with my military family, with learning about different cultures, raising rabbits, doing vegetable gardens, doing the alphabet with my daughter, the chemical etching company, the bankruptcy. Everything I learned seemed to build on something else. So when I finally got to the place where I owned my own company, the last piece I had to learn was accounting. Now, that was hard because that's not my skill. And I spent more time learning accounting than I had spent learning anything else in the previous 20 years.
Hmm.
And I accomplished it, and I despise it. But when you own your own company, it's important to know what's going on financially. I had no way to avoid it, but at least it was the last piece of the puzzle, and it wasn't the first thing that I had to learn along my way. We had talked about why there were two segments to this program, and basically what happened to me, the reason my career made such a change, is that when I was 40 years old, my son, who was 19, went over a cliff. And he was at death's door for 2 weeks. And we sat with him in coma in the hospital. It was a very, very hard time. It was a traumatic brain injury. I know more than I want to know about traumatic brain injuries. Those in the audience who have experienced this know how difficult it is to explain to people, because the brain is a very delicate instrument. And our abilities, the abilities that make us who we are like a very delicate construction. And when the brain is injured, that construct changes. So during this time period, I had to acknowledge that the 23-year marriage was over. It had been over for a long time. I had to consider the possibility that you could go to sleep at night and wake up in the morning and not be able to live your life. Still be alive, but not live your life. So again, in terms of a concept, I'd always thought that you were alive or you were dead. I had never thought there'd be any in-between gray area. And this is what my son was facing. So during this time period while he was in the hospital, I took a real hard look at my whole life. And I discovered that once again, just like when I'd started in the factory, just like when I'd left my home life and started my adult life, I wasn't living the life I wanted. And changes needed to be made.
Jan, you're very courageous for sharing your story. And my guest is the fascinating working woman, Jan Rigsby. You can learn more about Jan and her spiritual counseling work at her website, janrigsby.com. And shortly, we'll continue with part two of this broadcast, when I'll be asking Jan, just how did you transition from factory owner to spiritual counselor?
Thank you for having me.